I do not mean for the title of this episode to like put blame on women. Do you know what I mean? Like three ways women sabotage. No, no, no. Obviously, a lot of this is a byproduct of patriarchy and capitalism and blah, 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 blah. I just really want us to rise up and rise above and stay centered in self-love. So this will be like three ways we tend to sabotage our self-love and maybe how to not fall into those traps.
Hi, hello. Welcome to Mary's Cup of Tea, the self-love podcast for women, though all self-lovers are welcome here. I'm Mary. I write and speak about self-love, and I'm best known for my book, The Gift of Self-Love, and I also host retreats for women. And this is the podcast that will inspire you to love yourself. Real quick, before we dive in, I want to make sure you know about my book, The Gift of Self-Love. It's a workbook to help you build confidence, recognize your worth, and learn to love who you are. It's available anywhere books are sold. Thousands of people have it, love it, and have told me that it has greatly benefited their self-love journey, and I hope it'll do the same for you. And now let's get into the podcast.
Last week on my Instagram story, I shared a little tidbit about how I thought that undocumented immigrants were being treated unfairly by ICE and the Trump administration. It was very aggressive to me, and legally there was a lack of due process, and we all saw it unfold, regardless of how you feel about immigration and how much or how little should be allowed. I think we can all agree that due process is necessary. It's kind of the foundation of our freedoms and what democratic nations are built upon is the fact that if I say you're a criminal, people aren't just going to take my word for it and capture you. Not to mention that, you know, immigration is not a criminal offense, or being undocumented is not a criminal offense. Anyway, I don't remember what I said on the topic, but it was one short Instagram story slide. And I have a personal connection to it too, because I come from a family of immigrants. A lot of people in the Eastern European Slavic community are, you know, in the US immigrants. Not only that, but a lot of them started off as being undocumented. And I have close friends and family for whom that was the case. But of course, they don't get treated as inhumanely because of most likely the color of their skin and how presentable and palatable they are to the average American white person. But anyway, all that to say, I posted one little slide of my perspective sharing this, and I got a very angry message from actually somebody who's been following me a long time. So always surprises me how accusatory, I suppose, people can get the second that you don't 100% share their view. And the message said, "Did you have the same reaction when Obama deported 5 million illegal immigrants?" To which I said, "I was 10 years old." And I know that this wasn't about me. She continued to write me paragraphs and paragraphs. I didn't even read them, to be honest with you, because when I'm met with such blame and accusation and anger, obviously, like, that's not going to make me open to your perspective, which was a good kind of reminder for me to also not approach other people in my life from a place of blame and accusation and shame if I'm truly trying to get them to see my side. So I just recognize that this was unprocessed fear and discomfort, maybe her own personal shame for, I don't know, like, it's wild how when you get to know somebody, you realize that it is pure projection, like pure projection. The people who shit on others for a certain thing, 100% are dealing with that thing within themselves, like 100% in every case. It's just been proven time and time again in my life. So then later on, around that same day, I was reading Joy Sullivan's newsletter. She's a poet. And she wrote about a therapy session that she had recently, where she said to her therapist, "I don't want to talk about self-love when the world is burning." To which her therapist, without hesitating, said, "If Elon and Trump could love themselves, they wouldn't be harming the whole world. Self-love isn't a nice to have. It's at the epicenter, the origin of all collective healing." And I so deeply believe this, and I would include so many other politicians and people in general in that statement of, like, when we love ourselves, when we're grounded, when we are just at peace with who we are, we want nothing more than to spread that to other people. And my intention with this episode is to help us stay grounded, to give us tools for self-love, as always, of course. And maybe if you have the capacity, strengthen your ability to hold space for others, whether it's somebody sliding in your DM, disagreeing with something that you posted, or a family member arguing with you over the dinner table, or maybe it's just like your own kind of unsettling feeling of, like, where do I belong? How can I help? What do I do with myself when it feels like it almost feels wrong to care about your own well-being when there are others across the globe who might have it so much worse? And the media pushes us to put our precious energy and attention that direction at the expense of ourselves. And this really, all it does is, not only does it sabotage our own mental health and our own well-being, but it also sabotages our ability to effectively, to truly help the causes that you care about, the people that you care about. And there will be times, and there are times for me, when I don't know how to function, for sure. I think me recording this podcast episode, as silly as it may sound, but it's kind of me not succumbing to that energy, because I honestly, I had every excuse not to. I just got home from a trip to France with my sister, which was wonderful, but I got sick on my way back, of course, and my back still hurts a lot. I did not want to turn the camera on because of the way I feel doing it anyway, because just trying to practice not feeling so caught up in my appearance. And I recently chopped my hair. So in case you are watching on video, please don't. But in case you are, my hair is cut. Anyway, I am digressing so, so much. Let's get back to the point. Three ways that we sabotage our self-love, our inner peace, so that we can really tune inward. Also, oh my gosh, the positive podcast feedback has been extraordinary lately. It just fuels my heart and soul. So this review said, "Mary is a gift to this world. I started following her on Instagram when I was being bullied in high school. She was in her Canadian outdoorsy girl era and recovering from an eating disorder. I didn't realize it, but I was entrenched in my own eating disorder, and her open, honest conversations helped me tremendously. Nobody in my village in Alaska modeled a commitment to growth and self-love, and thank God I had access to the internet. Mary has guided me through over a dozen moves, a handful of heartbreaks, and huge milestones in my healing. When I need something in my ears to remind me that everything's going to be okay, I go to Mary. Thank you for continuing your healing journey. I've been here since 2018 and joyfully support you in every step you take on or off camera. I wouldn't be where I am today without your guidance. I'm so, so, so grateful for you." Okay. I think this warrants one more dramatic sip of tea. Okay, the first way that we tend to sabotage our self-love is by reacting before reflecting. Of course, that first story that I shared with you, where this gal was pointing her anger toward me, is a perfect example of that, right? We always look for someone to blame. It's so human. Someone who maybe didn't match our exact narrative, or someone who challenges us, reminds us of our own drawbacks. And ultimately, what this type of reaction does is, again, it makes you feel like you did something for your cause, when in reality, the reactions are generally misplaced. And that's why I think reactions are harmful, because the reaction usually is toward whoever is standing right in front of you, not toward the person or people, organizations, often corporations, who are actually the problem, who can actually create change, the reaction happens to whoever happens to be in your vicinity and you explode, right? Like road rage, for example. It's just like whatever cars are around you pissing you off, that's who you're going to like honk your horn at. It's not necessarily directed toward your mother-in-law who deeply hurt you earlier that day and you didn't know how to express yourself in that moment to her. So you just channel that out on the road toward everybody else, right? I don't like road rage. I also don't like when people like brag about having road rage as if it's like I'm more noble or smarter than everybody else. I'm a very calm driver. Like I don't like driving, but I'm a very, very calm driver for some reason. I think it's because my dad was a professional driver and he drove an emergency medical vehicle back in Russia. He was always like, I don't know, just telling me about how important it is to drive slowly and safely and calmly. Even if we were late, we were always coasting on the highway to a point where it would piss people off and then they would honk at us. And we've actually gotten pulled over for driving too slow on a highway. Anyway, why am I talking about this? I meant to talk about how in this day and age, everything pushes us to react. Aside from social media, you know, clickbait, metastasizing into rage bait and global news being at our fingertips before it's even fact-checked or validated, like anywhere you go online, of course, demands some sort of reaction and rewards you for reacting. So we are literally being trained like Pavlovian dogs to just like crave to salivate at any ping or push or scroll or like or heart or pop-up. You know, we literally, our bodies, our human animal psyches are now starting to think that this is normal and it's not. I was even thinking about like traveling with my sister gave me an inside look into teens these days because she just turned 17. We celebrated her birthday in France. It was so lovely. I can't wait to tell you all about that. But she would be like texting her friends at night, you know, catching up after a day of not having service. And she's really good about her phone, truly. Like she is not a screenager at all. And I'm so freaking proud of her for having good boundaries and balance with it all. And she really does use like her phone and social media to talk to friends. I don't find her like doom scrolling that much. But sometimes we'd be like mid conversation and she'd kind of be on her phone. She'd be like, wait, hold on a second. I have to reply to so-and-so because I already read the message so they can see that I read it. It got me thinking about how even read receipts, like, you know, where it says read. And I know on iPhone, you can turn these off, but I don't think you can turn them off on Instagram, which is where my sister talks to most of her friends through is Instagram. So if somebody sees that you read something, not only does it push them to react, right? To jump to conclusions. Why aren't they responding? What are they going to say? Are they mad at me? Whatever. What are they thinking? But it also pushes the receiver to react immediately, to respond, right? Because you know that they know that you read the message. Like it is a convoluted, chaotic mess that just hijacks our emotions. Why can't somebody take their time to respond? Why can't we be busy in real life and treat a text for like what it was meant to be, which is like, read this when you get a chance, right? Because if it was urgent, I'd probably be calling you. Anyway, that is me being a grumpy old boomer about it. But, you know, they have tech engineer, sound engineer, psychologist people who literally make every single ding and dong that you get on your phone, you know, all the different sounds that come for like different notifications, they make it so that they are irresistible, so that the curiosity eats you alive. Again, I just keep thinking of the Pavlovian dogs. I saw a really funny meme. This joke made me laugh way too hard. Why was Pavlov's hair so soft? Why did Pavlov, you know, the scientist, have such soft hair? Because he conditioned it. He conditioned it. Do you get it? He conditioned it. Like he conditioned his dogs. Oh my gosh. Okay. Anyway, at work, Every email feels urgent. Every meeting feels obligatory. Like, the expectation of an immediate response is absolutely insane. And it makes us say yes before even checking our bandwidth. A person and book that has really helped me with this reactful mindset. Is that a word? Reactful? Reactatory? Reacting? I don't know. Reactionary. Reactionary. A person who really helps me with this reactionary mindset is Oliver Berkman, who I had the great honor and privilege of having on this podcast a few episodes back. Just search Mary's Cup of Tea, Oliver. If you're a productivity geek, you need to listen to this episode. And if you are a perpetually overwhelmed little worm, then you definitely need to listen to this episode, because he talks about productivity from this lens of deep self-acceptance and self-compassion. And Oliver Berkman, I've just devoured his books over the years. I constantly come back to them because he's just helped me so, so much, like, balance this drive for achievement with this perpetual feeling of, like, I'm never doing enough. So if that's something you feel, please listen to that episode. But in his book, Meditations for Mortals, one of the first chapters talks about how pre-industrial revolution, our days were kind of inevitably intertwined with nature. And of course, this is a big principle of indigenous cultures, a lot of even developing nations to this day, where they don't live their lives being kind of like worshiping the clock or capital T time. Instead, they're more attuned with, like, the sun and stars and moon. And that really is for practical purposes, because before there was electricity or a boss to report to at the factory, you got up when the sun got up because you had to go, you know, plow your field or whatever. And the sun, funny thing about the sun is that it does not operate 24/7 like your phone does, nor does it demand you to operate 24/7 like a boss does, right? So what else am I doing to help combat this reactionary mindset? This little tiny permission slip I actually got from my audio editor, who will be listening to this as she's producing this podcast episode for you, in her email signature for as long as we've been working together, which is like 5.5 years now. Yay, Bethany, I love you so much. Thank you so much for supporting this podcast. I was always, over the years, inspired by her little note at the bottom of her emails, which said, "My work hours might be different from yours. I trust that you'll respond when the time feels right for you." And for years, I'd look at this and be like, "Oh, I love this so much." And finally, I implemented it. I don't know why it took me so long, but I put it in the bottom of my email too. Like, if I respond to you at 8 p.m., don't you fucking dare reply to me at 8:05 p.m. Do as I say, not as I do. We all have different energy levels and different styles of work. And even though I kind of work for myself, I still find myself falling into, like, the 9-to-5 expectations and then feeling a lot of shame when I don't sit here at my desk from 9 to 5. So in some ways, my 3 bulging discs in my back and inability to sit long periods of time has been a giant lesson, because I have to do a lot of my work laying down and take lots of breaks to walk and all that jazz. Okay, I feel like I'm belaboring this point. What I want to say is that I hope you take on my mantra, which is, I do not react, I reflect, and then respond. Reactions cause harm. Reactions are often reductive. Reactions don't give time or space for appropriate aligned actions. You can do so much more. You will be able to do so much more good when your feet are planted firmly on the ground rather than when you're tiptoeing over landmines, okay? You're going to do so much more when your feet are planted firmly on the ground. I would rather you rest now, absorb now, so that when you are full, when your cup is full, then you can take aligned action steps. Then you can organize. Then you can volunteer. Then you can make money, and maybe donate some of it or your time, because you'll have the bandwidth, the capacity, the energy. So I think it could behoove us to intentionally create a little distance, a little space, not to disconnect completely and ignore every inconvenient issue in the world, but rather so that you operate from a place of grounded self-love. Hey, self-lover, sorry to interrupt, but do you have my self-love playlist? There's over 300, if not 400 songs on it that are so fun and uplifting and empowering, and I think will really be perfect for when you're getting ready, trying to hype yourself up, dealing with a bad body image day, or anytime you just want a little boost of self-love, these tracks will do it for you. So head to maryscupoftea.com/playlist to get it, and know that I am dancing and jamming with you from afar. Cheers. Okay, the second way that us women tend to sabotage our self-love and inner peace is by rushing. Of course, rushing is a key ingredient to reacting, but we rush ourselves in all sorts of ways. The more we rush, the less we enjoy, and the slower you go, the more you absorb. This is a lesson that I learned time and time again, especially when I'm traveling. I've also learned that the more I rush, the more like late I am. So if I'm running behind and then I start trying to pick up speed to compensate, you know, when you're like rushing out the door and you have all this stuff in your hands because God forbid you make two trips because you're already running late. So you got to just like get out and go. Well, you know what happens is you drop your water bottle. That sets off a cascade of you drop everything else too while you're trying to pick up your water bottle as you're making your way to like your car or wherever you're going. All these things go wrong. Your shoe's untied. You can't even tie your shoe because your hands are so full. And suddenly you're moving so much slower by rushing than you would have had you taken two trips and just, you know, moved with purpose, but not necessarily from a place of urgency and lack. This sense of urgency, I think, is built into a lot of our systems. I recently saw my friend Victoria Garrick. She's a former D1 athlete. She talked about how this sense of urgency was built into her upbringing as an athlete, and how it was the coaches always drilled into her that like if you're not like rushing and going, then you're holding the team behind, you know. And unlearning that takes a lifetime. Slowing down's the only tool that is instantly at your disposal that you can practice no matter who you are, where you are, what you're doing. I promise you can slow down right now. What are you doing? Slow down. Are you driving? Slow it down. Are you walking? Take slower steps. Are you cooking? Slow down that potato peeling, girl. You're moving too fast. You're going to cut off a fingernail. Like, calm, purposeful, grounded. Put your feet firmly on the ground. Responding, reflecting before reacting, and slowing down. Next, the third and final little point is kind of a complex one. And that is, we sabotage ourselves by regretting. And I look at regret as having two different types, I suppose. There's the usual type of regret where you're ruminating on the past, right? You're wishing you can turn back time and make a different choice. And I think for the most part, like me personally, I don't have too much of that. There's not much that I would like really change about my life. However, what I do really struggle with is the second type of regret, which I call anticipatory regret. So it's like ruminating, but it's focused in the future. Some might call it overthinking, or sometimes I say anticipatory anxiety. It essentially comes from a fear of future regret. So you're afraid to make a decision now that future you will regret. So you spend so much time and energy weighing all case scenarios and optimizing for maximum efficiency and trying to do right by all people, often at the expense of yourself. This happens so much when I'm traveling, so much. This anticipation of regret was just really running my last trip with my sister, to be honest with you. Like, it was her first time abroad and it was our first sister trip. And I so badly wanted it to be a perfect experience. So I would read every single review and try to plan every single route to make it, you know, as pleasant as possible and pick every single activity so that it, you know, really wowed her. I just drove myself crazy with trying to make this trip perfect. And the more I did that, again, it was just like rushing. The more I rushed or tried to avoid the fear of regret of not picking the perfect cafe to get a croissant at, the more dissatisfied I would be. I don't know about her. I'm not going to speak for her, but I think she would say, like, it made her sister very stressed out. So, of course, like, that kind of ruined the trip too. Do you know what I mean? So, every time I would pick this perfect cafe for the perfect croissant, then you get the croissant and you're like, actually, was this worth the kind of like 25 minute trek out of our way because it had 0.1 star better reviews than the other place next door to us did? Like, it's kind of ridiculous. And I know I'm not the only one, because the New York Times back in like October published an op-ed called Reclaiming a Sense of Novelty. And it was just about the joy of, again, romanticizing the pre-phone, pre-internet era, where you kind of had to like just raw dog it, you know? You just walked into a restaurant without knowing what everybody else said about it, reading the reviews, right? You kind of like trusted somebody's recommendation, or even you let yourself sway off the beaten path and you got lost a lot because a map wasn't on Google. It was, well, in my day, it was MapQuest. So you would print it in advance. But then even before my day, like, what did you do? You asked people for directions and hoped that they steered you the right way, or just kind of wandered around until you found your way? I mean, again, I get so nostalgic for this time that I feel like we will never have back. I just really struggle with this fear of anticipatory regret. And when I got home from France, I told my husband about it, and we had an amazing time, like such a great time. I'm hoping my sister can come on the podcast so we can talk about it. But I looked at my husband and I said, I think I need therapy for this like one ultra specific thing, because it is just exhausting. It is just so exhausting to constantly be maximizing. And it comes from a lack of self-worth. That's why it's a, you know, self-sabotaging mechanism, because I think that it's going to make my sister love me more if I show her like the best of travel in France and create, you know, what is going to be the best memories. And I, my brain wants control so badly that I tie that to picking the perfect bike tour in the city. But in reality, it just perpetuates the lack, like constantly trying to fix yourself or constantly trying to control or perfect only perpetuates lack, the lack of self-worth, the lack of feeling enough. So what I've been telling myself, and I don't know if this will be helpful to you, because as I said, I don't really have like past regrets. So if you do have past regrets, this is not going to help you at all. Sorry. But I have been telling myself, like, I'd rather regret in the future. I'd rather deal with that regret than miss out on the present. Like, I would rather be like, this croissant was kind of mediocre, and that's a problem for future me, than miss out on the present because, you know, I'm so in my phone going on like Google and Yelp trying to find the perfect place that meanwhile my sister's like trying to talk to me about something. And I'm like, no, wait, hold on. Like, I'm planning our day. I would much rather in the future be like, when we come back, I love saying that too. Like, when we come back, we're going to do this part a little bit differently. I think the energy of that is just a lot lighter, and you still get to like share the experience, the good and the bad, without driving yourself crazy in the process. So I'd rather regret in the future than miss out on the present, because really the present is all we have. Okay. For somebody who is so sick and tired, I really went off on this podcast. My tonsils are the size of Madagascar. Nevertheless, I hope you enjoyed it. Love you so much, and I'll talk to you in the next episode.
If you're enjoying our self-love podcast, please take a moment to leave a comment or a review letting me know what your biggest takeaway was. I love hearing from you, and it just keeps me connected to the purpose, which is always to spread the gift of self-love.